goes into television
and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Semi-detached house with very, very thin walls. Now, I didn't mind hearing the neighbor's radio all the time, but we could see their television as well. They do say that television is killing the art of conversation. I went round to a friend's house the other day. The whole family was gathered round the box gawping. The only one who spoke was the budgie. He said, "Shut up, sit down, it's on." Did you hear about the poor lady who couldn't go shopping? Her TV set had broken down. She didn't know what to buy. Two girls were talking, and one said, "Do you prefer watching television or going out with your boyfriend?" That one said, "There's not much in it, really. Either way, I get a lot of interference." Some late-night TV chat shows are so infantile, it's criminal to keep them up so late. The boys down the factory called her Telly because she never had much on Saturday nights and she often gave repeat performances on Sundays. The woman said, "I used to like television, but all the violence has put me off. Every time I switch on Crossroads, my husband clats me."
It's now an established fact that watching television is the most popular leisure activity in this country, far exceeding the attractions of sport, model making, reading, or anything else. The hold of the medium is so strong that it's sometimes difficult to imagine how people filled their evenings before its invention. The effects of this massive popularity are far-reaching. Television has its influence on every aspect of life, even health. A doctor has recently described a condition of television tummy. Apparently, sitting and eating, slumped in front of the box for hours on end, has very nasty effects on our stomach muscles. But there's a strange thing about television. Despite its popularity, no one has a good word to say for it. Perhaps people take so much the technological miracle for granted that they're no longer impressed. They simply feel that if entertainment appears in their sitting rooms, they're entitled to criticize it savagely. Or it may be that they fear that the compulsive habit of television viewing is threatening to take over their lives. In the words of Orson Welles,
"I hate television. I hate it as much as peanuts. And I can't stop eating peanuts."
Other people have been equally dismissive of the medium. A prophecy by C.P. Scott.
"Television? No good will come out of this device. The word is half Greek and half Latin."
Al Witten.
"Television has brought mediocrity within everyone's reach."
A definition from Fred Allen.
"Television, a device that permits people who haven't anything to do to watch people who can't do anything."
And another backhanded compliment from Sam Goldwyn.
"Why should people go out and pay money to see bad films when they can stay at home and see bad television for nothing?"
Bad films for nothing. It sometimes seems that nobody has a good word to say for television, but no one denies its power.
"Hey, Mr. General Public, do you realize that we got a generation here of staring eyes? The women never bother getting housework done. They just sit around for television. Kitties never run a train out of door. On top of that, they never reading books no more. You ask them who's the father of our countryman. They say was either Walt Disney or Ed Sullivan.
Oh, television.
Looking on television. I got a weak in the eyes, weak in the head likewise, from sitting and looking on television. The children of the country eat their dinner, you bet, but they eat it sitting in front of the TV set. They got pudding in their ears from the north to the south, from eating while watching and missing their mouth. Last night a very unusual thing occurred. The baby is saying his very first word. I have him on my shoulder for to make him burp. Instead he open his mouth and say, why it burp.
Television. Television. Television.
Television is a new medium and is still making advances in both technology and style. Part of the reason for the volume of criticism on the subject is probably that it's still developing and still sorting out its own identity. As an anonymous wit put it,
they say TV is still in its infancy, which helps to explain why you have to get up so much and change it.
E.B. White commented in the early days of the medium,
"It must have been 2 years ago that I attended a television demonstration at which it was shown beyond reasonable doubt that a person sitting in one room could observe the nonsense in another."
Incidentally, it's called a medium because most things are neither good nor bad. They're just medium. But it is easily the most important way to achieve instant fame. At its best, it does introduce the eminent to the public. In the words of Gore Vidal,
"Television is now so desperately hungry for material that they're scraping the top of the barrel."
Here's a typical remark from Noel Coward.
"Time has convinced me one thing. Television is for appearing on, not for looking at."
What about those professional artists who appear on television? What's it like for them? Here's what Max Wall said about it.
"Oh, yes, it's not easy, you know. I mean, they ring you up, they ring your agent, and say, want to do a television show next month, you see, so you go away and you... It takes you 2 weeks to write an act. And then you try and learn it. Then you go run to rehearsals. For 3 weeks you rehearse, some dingy rehearsal room somewhere. 5 days a week for 3 weeks. 9 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You learn it. Then comes the day, you report to the studio, 9 o'clock in the morning, under the hot lights. You sweat. You go through it once, twice, five, six times. Repeating, repeating, repeating. Stopping, starting. And then comes the moment, the show's about to commence. On go the lights, the sound, the cameras. You do your performance, you stand there in front of the television cameras, and the camera divides your picture into the primary colours of red, green and blue by means of a prism, into the plumbicon tubes where it's transformed into a varying electrical waveform, and the pulses go through the cable via the studio control gallery, then by a microwave link to the transmitter. And then it goes into the cloister and through the feeder to the mast, for where it's transmitted through the air to some suburban house aerial. But the signal goes down the coaxial cable into the television cathode ray tube, and the electrons bombard the screen into 625 lines to reform the picture of you there in the living room, on the television set, in that suburban home. And for all you know, the people might be out."
The most common way that celebrities appear on television is in the chat show, a format in which few people appear at their best, as demonstrated on The Kevin Mousetrap Show.
Thank you very much. Well, we've got a wonderful, marvellous, super terrific show tonight, and you'll be meeting some wonderful, marvellous, super terrific people. Here's the first wonderful, marvellous, super terrific guest star celebrity personality on the show, me. We're hoping to have on the show His Highness King Otto of Liechtenstein, a really wonderful, marvellous, super terrific monarch, but unfortunately he's slightly absent, and so instead, here's our first trade unionist, Sir Reginald Bucket. Reggie, tell me, what's it like being King of Liechtenstein, Reggie?
Well, I ain't the King of Liechtenstein, am I?
Super, no. Let me put it another way. I mean, the point is, what's it like not being the King of Liechtenstein?
Well, it's not changed me in any way.
Super, well, that's certainly good news. And now, here's the bad news. We've just heard that following the recent coup in Liechtenstein, Reg Bucket is now, in fact, King. How about that, King Reg?
Well, this is all news to me, am I? Hey,
oh, liberation!
Well, that's the first civil war we've actually had on the show, and I hope you... This brings me to our next guest, philosopher, wit, traveller, and appalling old bore, Arnold P. Totty.
Good evening. How do? Do you?
Good evening.
And a good evening to you too, sir. To you too. How do you do?
Terrific. Mr. Todd, what I want to know is, basically, should priests be free to take drugs?
I've written a book, you know.
Super. Now, basically, in a sentence, I mean, the point is, a lot of people must descend to you. I mean, basically, in a word, would you sell your house to a gorilla?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Super. And good evening to you too, sir. I've written a book.
Now, leaving the book aside for the moment, how do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
No, thank you.
That's the wrong answer. Good, super. Can you come back next week? Wonderful, marvellous, super, terrific. Now, I'll just say goodbye.
Hello.
Now, this is where I walk along the studio audience and chat to them quite casually on their sort of level. And here in the front row, I see we have a little old lady, and it's Mrs. Minnie Goosacre.
Oh, however did you know that, Kevin?
Well, I know quite a lot about you, Minnie. In fact, I know you have a brother in Canada.
Oh, yes, I have.
Terrific. And I also know that you haven't seen him for 27 years.
No, I haven't.
Well, just think of that. A brother all those miles away in Canada that you haven't seen for 27 years. Well, tonight, Minnie, surprise, surprise, we've just heard that he's been run over by a bus.
That was John Cleese and the I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again team. That raises one of the arguments that's always levelled against television, that it trivialises in the constant search for novelty and sensation. Here's a quote from Richard G. Stern.
Anybody can shock a baby or a television audience, but it's too easy and the effect is disproportionate to the effort.
While it's easy to shock, it's more difficult to go on shocking. And that's what television is accused of, weakening the impact of suffering or other emotion by constant repetition. That's another reason why some people are so vehement in their hatred of the medium. But in some cases, the motive for criticism is less worthy. It can be just snobbery, as in this letter to the listener.
Speaking personally, I would never contemplate the notion of watching a television program because the idea that I might be doing exactly the same thing as 20 million other people is repulsive to me.
Of course, one shouldn't condemn anything unseen. That's mere prejudice. One has to watch television before forming an opinion on it. Follow the example of James Thurber.
About once a month after dinner, I gird up my loins, such as they are, take as deep a breath as I can, throw my shoulders back as far as they will go, walk into the room with the television set, boldly turn it on, picking a channel at random, and then see how long I can stand it.
With practice, of course, one can stand it all evening. And part of the attraction is the people, the familiar faces. It looks a glamorous life out there on the little screen. No wonder everyone wants to be a television star. Shepherd Mead.
If you have no talent or no special ability, if you are plain, stupid, or even a little repulsive, you need not be discouraged. Some of the people who've become richest in television are people just like you.
That's sweet. And perhaps the success in television is sometimes, but frequently, the result of a lot of hard work. And it really shows when an amateur is put into that professional setting. It doesn't happen so much now, but they used to have a lot of programs in which learned professors who've just returned from trips of exploration would comment on the film which they'd taken. Let's hear one such professor commenting on the seven lost cities of the Incas.
There, you just arriving at the first of the seven lost cities of the Incas. As you can see, there's quite a bit of excitement here as we arrive. It happened they had a total eclipse of the sun, and it coincided with our arrival. And the superstitious natives began to pray to us, the sun gods, and begged us to please return the sun to their skies.
which we did.
Well, as I say, we didn't have too much time to spend in any one village, so here we are off the next morning and arriving late that afternoon at the second of the seven lost cities of the Incas. Here you see us being greeted by the chief. They had a rather strange custom in this village of providing each male visitor with a bride for his stay. We tried to explain to them that this was not the custom in our country. No, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. We spent a total of 2.5 weeks in this story. Only left us one day. Thank you very much.
Bob Newhart. Is that all the knocking that television gets? There's much to be said in its favour. Apart from the breadth and variety of entertainment it offers, it can also serve certain social functions. Here's an extract from a letter to the Daily Mirror.
Three of my children went to approved schools for minor offences. Another was beginning to go the same way until I got a TV on the HP. The boy became as good as gold. He started to go to church after watching services on television and would not go out even when we wanted him to. Since the set went back to cause a non-payment, he has reverted to his old ways.
Sad one, isn't it? Apart from just keeping youngsters off the streets, television can play a more positive role in their upbringing. Here's a suggestion from a letter printed in John Bull.
As children seem to take notice of everything they see on television these days, it would set a great example to us all if the saying of grace before meals was incorporated into the food advertisement.
And then there's the entertainment, which is often much better than this remark by Franklin P. Jones would suggest.
Poor reception is about the only way you can improve some television programs.
Think of the range of what television offers there. News, sport, drama, discussion, serials, children's programs, and of course light entertainment. Television invests an enormous amount of effort and money in making people laugh. Some feel that this development has been at the expense of live theatre and music hall. Here's a famous remark from Fred Allen.
Vaudeville is dead. Television is the box they buried it in.
But the medium can rise to the big occasion with its variety shows. I'm not talking about the Eurovision Song Contest, but think of the endless entertainment of Christmas. Here's a line from Willis Hall and Bob Monkhouse.
Christmas is a 3-day television festival dedicated to the birth of Bing Crosby.
In recent years, those 3 days seem to have spread to about a fortnight. But television doesn't just concentrate on the big occasions, it keeps up a constant flow of new material all the year round. Well, except for the summer, when it keeps up a constant flow of repeats. But all the year round, you can watch all those soap operas and those endless, identical American crime cop series.
The legend you are about to hear is true.
Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 5 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him. You call me, chief?
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that 45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah. You were right.
I was right?
Yeah. It was a gun. 8:22 p.m. I talked to one of the maidens who had almost been devoured. Could I talk to you, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm St. George, ma'am. Homicide, ma'am. I want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. I understand you were almost devoured by the man. Is that right, dragon?
It was terrible. He breathed fire on me. He banged me already.
How can I be sure of that, ma'am?
Believe me, I got it straight from the dragon's mouth.
11:45 p.m. I rode over the King's Highway. I saw a man. Stopped to talk to him.
Pardon me, sir. Could I talk to you for just a minute, sir?
Sure, I don't mind.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a knave.
Didn't they pick you up on a 903 last year for stealing tarts?
Yeah? So what, do you want to make a federal case out of it?
No, sir. We heard there was a dragon operating in this neighborhood. We just want to know if you've seen him.
Sure, I've seen him.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe him for me?
What's to describe? You see one dragon, you've seen them all.
Would you try and remember, sir, just for the record? We just want to get the facts, sir.
Well, he was, you know, he had orange polka dots.
Yes, sir.
Purple feet, breathing fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And one big bloodshot eye right in the middle of his forehead, and, like that.
Notice anything unusual about him?
No, he's just one of the real dragon, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, you can go now.
Hey, by the way, how are you going to catch him?
I thought you'd never ask. A dragon net. 3.05 p.m. I was riding back into the courtyard to make my report to the lab. Then it happened. It was the dragon.
Hey, I'm the fire-breathing dragon. You must be St. George, right?
Yes, sir.
I see you got one of them new 45 caliber swords.
That's about the size of it.
You slay me.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
I'm taking in a 502. You figure it out.
What's the charge?
Devouring maidens out of season.
Out of season? You never pinned that rap on me. Do you hear me, cop?
Yeah, I hear you. I got you in a 412, too.
A 412? What's a 412?
Overacting.
On September the 5th, the dragon was tried and convicted.
His fire was put out, and his maiden devouring license revoked.
Maiden devouring out of season is punishable by a term of not less than 50 or more than 300 years.
There's another piece from Stan Freeberg. I suppose the great power and the great danger of television is its mesmeric quality, which can sap the will to do anything at all. It has far-reaching consequences, as evidenced by this report from the Leicester Mercury.
Latest victims of television? Leicester's public conveniences. So many people now stay at home at night that takings all over the city have fallen by about 12%.
And some people do seem to be completely lost without their sets. I suppose they're terrified of having to fall back on primitive amusements like conversation. Here's a report from the Daily Herald.
A couple returned early from their honeymoon yesterday because the cottage where they were staying didn't have a TV set. The 21-year-old husband, John Johnson, said there was nothing at all to do but eat and sleep.
Oh, well, it must be very confusing for people with that kind of attitude to encounter anyone who doesn't share their opinion. Here's a heart-rending mother's plea from the Daily Mirror.
How can I get my 2-year-old daughter interested in television? We sit her in front of the set, she watches for a minute and says, "Switch it off, Mummy." I should hate to think that my daughter will grow up uninterested in TV.
Yes, it's hard to resist the power of television. Perhaps those science fiction stories of takeover by telly aren't so far from the truth. Maybe there is a worldwide conspiracy of electronic gadgets against us.
I walk into his elevator. And there are no people in the elevator, no buttons on the wall or anything. And I hear a voice say, "Kindly call out your floors, please." And I look around and I'm alone. And I panic. You know, I in the event of any sort of emergency, I lose control of the major muscles quickly, you know. And I read on the wall that it's a new elevator and it works on a sonic principle. And it's all sound. All I have to do is say what floor I want to go to and it takes me there. So I say, "3, please." And the doors close and the elevator starts going up to 3. And on the way up, I began to feel very self-conscious because I talk, I think, with a slight New York accent. And the elevator spoke quite well. So I get out and I'm walking down the hall and I look back and I thought I heard the elevator make a remark. I turn quickly and the door's closed and the elevator goes down, you know, and I didn't want to get involved at that time with the elevator in Hollywood. But this is the strange part of the story. That was the normal part. I have never in my life had good relationships with mechanical objects of any sort, anything that I can't reason with or kiss or fondle. I get into trouble. I have a clock that runs counterclockwise for some reason, and I have a tape recorder. I paid $150 for it. And as I talk into it, it goes, I know, I know. About 3 years ago, I couldn't stand it anymore. I was home one night. I called a meeting of my possessions. I got everything I owned into the living room. My toaster, my clock, my blender. They'd never been in the living room before. And I spoke to them. I was really adorable. I opened with a joke. And then I said, I know what's going on, and cut it out. I have a sun lamp, and as I sit under it, it rains on me. And I spoke to each appliance. I was really articulate. And then I put him back, and I felt good. And 2 nights later, I'm watching my portable television set. It has to jump up and down. And I go up to it, and I always talk before I hit. And I said, I thought we had discussed this. What's the problem? And the set kept going up and down, so I hit it. And it felt good hitting it. And I beat the hell out of it as well. I was really great. I tore off the antenna, and I felt very virile. Well, 2 days later, I go to my dentist in New York. I haven't gone to my dentist, but I had a very deep cavity, and he had sent me to a chiropodist. And I go into a building in Midtown, New York, and I have those elevators. And I hear a voice say, kindly call out your floors, please. And I say, 16. And the doors close, and the elevator starts going up to 16. And on the way up, the elevator says to me, are you the guy that hit the television set? I felt like an ass, you know. And it took me up and down fast between floors. And it threw me off in the basement. And it yelled out something that was anti-Semitic. And the upshot of the story is that day, I call my parents, my father was fired. He was technologically unemployed. My father worked for the same firm for 12 years. They fired him. They replaced him with a tiny gadget this big. It does everything that my father does, only it does it much better. The depressing thing is my mother ran out and bought one.
Woody Allen has brought our program on television to a close. Next week, another live, on-the-spot, up-to-the-minute, pacing report on the subject of radio. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Another report.
Goes into television was produced by Simon Brett and John Davis.